ask you to open to the 23rd Psalm tonight. We're going to take a few moments, both this morning and if the Lord should permit us to, Sunday, to look at some things from that Psalm. That shows up in this week's and last week's, or this past Sunday's lesson in our class, but figured since it was the last one listed, we probably wouldn't have time to get to it, and maybe wanted to make sure to talk about a couple of things that I think are just interesting in that psalm. I have, at least personally, have just loved getting back into the psalms again. I'm hoping that that if you haven't already fallen in love with the psalms, that you're doing so as we're studying them. They are just tremendous writings to be able to read and to be able to get real insight into the heart of David and the other psalmists and into the character of God as they describe certain things. The 23rd Psalm, clearly the most familiar, maybe not only psalm, maybe the most familiar Bible passage to the majority of people, certainly is one of those, has become a lot more familiar in the years since the Civil War. Prior to the Civil War, the 23rd Psalm really was not used extensively in the way that it is used now, meaning that being read at most funerals or many funerals. That's kind of a post-Civil War use of the psalm. It wasn't really seen that way, probably until the tribute that was written by Henry Ward Beecher was written, and that seemed to really be an impetus that took it that direction. I want to read to you what he wrote, because I think this tribute to Psalm 23 is just beautifully written, just really helps us to understand the nature of that psalm. Blessed be the day on which that psalm was born. What would you say of a pilgrim commissioned of God to travel up and down the earth, singing a strange melody, which, when once heard, caused him to forget whatever sorrow he had? And so the singing angel goes on his way through all lands, singing in the language of every nation, driving away trouble by the pulses of the air which his tongue moves with divine power. Behold, just such a one. This pilgrim God has sent to speak in every language on the globe. It has charmed more griefs to rest than all the philosophy of the world. It has remanded to their dungeon more felon thoughts, more black doubts, more thieving sorrows than there are sands on the seashore. It has comforted the noble host of the poor. It has sung courage to the army of the disappointed. It has poured balm and consolation into the heart of the sick, of captives in dungeons, of widows in their pinching griefs, of orphans in their loneliness. Dying soldiers have died easier as it was read to them. Ghastly hospitals have been illuminated. It has visited the prisoner and broken his chains, and like Peter's angel, led him forth in imagination and sung him back to his home again. It has made the dying Christian slave freer than his master, and consoled those whom dying he left behind, mourning not so much that he was gone, as because they were left behind and could not go too. Nor is its work done. It will go on singing to your children and my children and to their children through all the generations of time. Nor will it fold its wings till the last pilgrim is safe and time ended. And then it shall fly back to the bosom of God, whence it issued and sound on, mingled with all those sounds of celestial joy which make heaven musical forever. That is just, I think, wonderfully written as a description of the 23rd Psalm. Because David is going to express some things in this psalm that are just fantastic. It is written differently than many of the psalms, if not most of the psalms, that David wrote. Though David wrote a lot of psalms about comfort and wrote a lot of psalms where he talked about the refuge nature of God, almost all of those psalms were written not from the position of confidence only, but of confidence also amongst request. Don't know if you've ever noticed that before in the 23rd Psalm, but this is a psalm really without that feeling. This is a psalm of statement. This is a psalm of absolute confidence. David speaks as if all of these things have already taken place. And so there is no asking God. There is no, God, will you be my shepherd? God, will you lead me beside those waters? Will you help me to have rest? David says, no, those things are just stated as fact. Those are done. This is a psalm of David that is of personal trust. A psalm where David just says, this is who my God is. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I would tell you, just even starting there, that's interesting because the Lord is called the shepherd of Israel in numerous places. Back in Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 11, it talks about the Lord will shepherd his people like sheep. And almost exclusively in the Old Testament, every time God is mentioned in the role of shepherd, it is shepherd of the nation of Israel. But that is not the case in this psalm. In this psalm, David brings this to an absolutely personal level. The Lord is my shepherd. This is as personal a relationship as it can possibly be between David and his God. Many times does David call on God on behalf of the nation of Israel along with himself, but not this time. This time is just David saying, this is who my God is. This is what my God has done. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. Leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Unbelievably confident statements made by David. And that's not always as easy to do as David does with this psalm. Let me read to you something else. I came across this poem. It's called Present Tense, is the name of the poem. I actually came across it in a book that was written, which I found a little odd, but the book was written, Never Lick a Moving Blender was the name of the book. But he included this in there. As it talked about this particular poem, Present Tense. This poem was written by a young man by the name of Jason Lehman. It's difficult when you read this poem to think that he was 14 years old when he wrote this. So just keep that in mind. He was 14 when he wrote this. This was published first in a Dear Abby column in 1989. That's the first place it really showed up, and then others have included it since then. Here's what he wrote. It was spring, but it was summer I wanted, the warm days and the great outdoors. It was summer, but it was fall I wanted, the colorful leaves and the cool, dry air. It was fall, but it was winter I wanted, the beautiful snow and the joy of the holiday season. It was winter, but it was spring I wanted, the warmth and the blossoming of nature. I was a child, but it was adulthood I wanted, the freedom and the respect. I was 20, but it was 30 I wanted to be mature and sophisticated. I was middle-aged, but it was 20 I wanted the youth and the free spirit. I was retired, but it was middle age I wanted the presence of mind without limitations. And then my life was over and I never got what I wanted. That's an interesting poem from a 14-year-old perspective especially. But it is so descriptive of what happens to us in this life. Because satisfaction is not easily attained. We know that. From the time that we're young, every small child wants more toys, more TV time, whatever it is that they're looking for. They want more teenagers. From the time that they start teenage years, want more freedom. They want more ability to do what they want to do, the time that they want to have. When we get to be adults, we typically want more security, whether we're talking about financial or as we age, we think in terms even of we want more health. We want more loyalty from our children and more relationship with those that we love. But those aren't bad things to want. It just helps us understand that to make a statement like David made in the 23rd Psalm, verse 1, I shall have no want, is the way that literally would read. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I shall have no want. We don't use that phrase, we know today, but we understand what that means. David is saying, there's nothing at all that I lack or that I will lack in my life. I just want you to think about David. You've probably already talked about it some in class this last Sunday while we were gone. But David spent some time doing things like hiding in caves and Saul trying to kill him and people pursuing him and family that was disrupted at times in his life where there were all kinds of family issues and death that was associated with David and the people that he loved the most. And David says, the Lord is my shepherd. I don't lack anything at all. I want us to just think about that a little bit this evening as we talk about this psalm. We're only going to talk about the first part, really, of this psalm this evening. And then if the Lord should allow, we'll talk about the second half of the psalm when we meet on Sunday for our regular worship time, not in class. The shepherd provides, David says. He says, I shall not want. Nothing at all. Nothing at all that I need. Nothing at all that I won't have that the Lord hasn't given to me that I would want to have. David pictures himself as a sheep. The Lord is my shepherd. I would tell you that's already an acknowledgement by David. That's very infrequently, if ever, used in a favorable manner. When Jesus said that they're like sheep who are scattered and have no shepherd as he looked at his people. That's not a complimentary comment. Or when Isaiah said, all like sheep have gone astray. That's not a complimentary statement. David says, I understand I'm a sheep. I need the Lord. The same as the sheep needs the shepherd, I need the Lord to fulfill that role in my life. And this is where it starts. The Lord provides. Like the shepherd provides. And that's what David's going to tell us first. He says, there's nothing at all that I lack in this life. I can have anything. Philip Keller, who wrote a book called A Shepherd's Look at the 23rd Psalm. If you've never read that, I would strongly encourage that you get a copy of that from somewhere and that you read that. That is a tremendous book, A Shepherd's Look at the 23rd Psalm. And one of the things that he makes a point about them is that he was a sheep rancher. He says, sheep need more attention than all other livestock because, and he goes on to talk about the fact that sheep are dumb, dirty animals. And he just, so you think about David starting off saying, this is who I'm going to liken myself to. I'm going to liken myself to the livestock that requires the most attention. And who would have known that better than David? Who had been in the fields and who had shepherded these sheep. David understood the very nature of that. If you don't, Philip Keller goes on to talk about, if you don't make the sheep move on, he says they'll eat the grass until there is no more grass. They'll eat the roots. They'll kill the field. And so the shepherd has to continue to move them on because the sheep don't understand that at all. He talks about the sheep have no real defense system. The only thing they can do is run. Sheep are nearsighted and stubborn. And yet because of their only defense mechanism, they are extremely easily frightened. He talks about a single jackrabbit can stampede an entire herd of sheep because they are spooked so easily. So think about David saying, you know what, Lord, I'm there and I want to be strong, but sometimes I'm so frightened. It's easy sometimes to make me move off of the point where I am. It's easy to understand that I don't know what's best for me. And if you just leave me to myself, I won't do the things that are best for me. He talks about they have no homing instincts. I didn't know that about sheep. You know, you read stories all the time about dogs or cats or other animals that get taken away from home or somehow get left behind, who have these long journeys and eventually make it back to their home. Sheep have no homing instincts. They count on the shepherd to get them out to their wherever they're going and back from wherever they're going. Otherwise, that's why they go. They go astray. They just get left that way. He talks about how important it is to understand the nature of the guidance. A sheep, and one of the pictures that I didn't put up here, but one of the pictures I got was showing a sheep as it was on the precipice of a cliff. It's ready to walk off. Would have walked off to its death if somebody didn't stop it from doing so. And David just says, I acknowledge that, Lord. I acknowledge that I'm a sheep. And I acknowledge that the only reason I have what I need to have is because the Lord is my shepherd. That's the only reason he can say, I shall not want. The only reason I can say, I don't have need of anything is only because I have the great shepherd. And here's the things that David says that the Lord does for him. He says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. David says, God gives me rest. God gives me comfort. Now, when Saul's chasing you and Saul's wanting to kill you, or Saul's throwing spears at you and pinning things to the wall, how easy is it to say, God causes me to lie down in green pastures? Philip Keller in that book also describes what it takes for sheep to lie down. They won't lie down if certain things are going on in their life. Sheep will not lie down if they are hungry. They will continue to eat until they are full. David says, I'm satisfied with God. I'm just satisfied. They won't lie down if they're afraid at all. If they sense that there are wolves about, or there's something else that's got them spooked, they stay on their feet because the only defense they have is that ability to run, and so they won't lie down. They won't lie down if they're bothered by something like flies or fleas and things of that nature. If that's a problem, then the sheep won't get comfortable. They just won't lie down. They won't lie down if there's a disturbance within the flock. Sheep have what they call a butting order, head-butting kind of order. That's how they establish. And unless everybody understands their position and everybody's comfortable with their position, all the sheep, then they won't lie down. David says, he makes me to lie down. When Paul said to the Corinthians that he's the God of all comfort, he's just saying, God's the only thing that can cause me to be comfortable and lie down in these green pastures. Even in a world, David wasn't in a world that was any better than ours. He wasn't in a life that was any easier than ours. And yet he says, I lie down in green pastures. He says also, he leads me beside the still waters. Sheep are extremely afraid of rapidly moving water. And you might, if you haven't already, you might be able to figure that out pretty easily. Don't know if you've ever fallen in the water. We went fishing in Florida one time. And I was trying to tie up a boat to a piling that we were underneath a bridge doing some fishing. It was in February, about this time of year. And it was unusually cold. If I recall, it was in the 40s for Florida. That's pretty cold, but air temp is okay. You can dress okay for 40 degrees, even when you're out on the water like we were. But as I threw that rope around the piling and went to grab the rope, a wave hit the front of the boat. I'm standing right on the bow of the boat. Wave hit the front of the boat. The boat started to drift away from the piling. And so we don't have the motor on because you're tying up. So I'm holding on the piling, and I just pulled until the boat finally got back up to the piling and thought, phew, that was closer than I wanted it to be. I threw the rope again. A bigger wave hit this time. So I held on as long as I could until I get more and more horizontal, where I couldn't support my own body weight any longer, went into the water. Don't know if you remember the old CPO jackets, they called them. They were flannel jackets, looked like on the outside. They were plaid, a great fashion statement. Plaid jackets with heavy fleece lining, and then with some kind of lining that was between the fleece and the outside of the jacket. I had that on top of two sweatshirts, a regular shirt, and a t-shirt, a pair of jeans, two pair of socks, a pair of tennis shoes. I'm guessing when I went into the water, I weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of about 800 pounds. Couldn't get back in the boat. Try as I might, could not get back in the boat. It took everything I had and the guy who was with me, who was piloting the boat, took everything both of us had just to finally drag me back into the boat. Why? Because all of that clothing just absorbed an incredible amount of water. That's exactly what happens to a sheep, and they know that. If they get in the water and they fall into the water that's rapidly moving, they bog down. That wool just soaks more and more water and drowns the sheep. And so David says, he leads me beside still waters where I can get something to drink, where he can provide for me. He takes care of me in that way. He doesn't take me to the rushing waters. David in one of the other Psalms says, when the mighty waters are rushing, the Lord will protect me. He will guide me. That's what he's saying. Similar to Paul talking to the Corinthians and saying, he's not going to allow something to happen to you that is beyond what you are able. God's going to keep. If you'll be faithful to him, he'll keep you in that protective barrier, at least to where you won't be tempted to a point where there's no way out of it. He says, I won't do that to you. Shepherds will build dams and streams to divert water so that it will pool, similar to what you see up here, so that the sheep can have something to drink. Still waters. Where they feel comfortable. I've got God providing for me, and there's no danger associated with that. He says, that's what my God does for me. Makes me to lie down in green pastures. Leads me beside still waters. He says, he restores my soul. As we mentioned, sheep stray, and sheep do not come back. They just don't come back. If one sheep gets away from the rest, it doesn't come back. That's why Jesus tells a parable in Luke about that very thing. He says, when a man has all these sheep and there's one stray, what does the man do? He leaves the 99 that he might go get the one and bring him back. And why does he have to do that? Because the sheep will never return on its own. He cannot get back to the flock from where he is. And David says, he restores me. He restores my soul. He brings me back again. This is the very picture of salvation and relationship with God that David's talking about. There's a drama that's done on the story of Christ, not the Passion Play, but there's another drama. And this drama has a family. It shows them, and they're working in a carpentry shop around first century time. And as they're working, they've got a younger boy, a teenage boy, who's kind of resistant to doing what they want him to do. And the parents tell him, you need to do this because we have a contract from the Roman government. We have promised to build these crosses. And that's what that family does. They build crosses for the Roman government, which are used for crucifixions. And so the boy does. He submits to his parents, and he helps build the crosses as they normally do. And he comes home one day weeping. His parents said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "That man Jesus of Nazareth that we love to hear talk, that speaks to us and that cares, they crucified him on my cross today." The parents, trying to comfort him, said, "No, you know, it wasn't your cross. There are lots of cross makers that are making crosses for the Roman government. It could have been anybody's cross." And the boy said, "No, it was my cross. When you weren't looking, I carved my initials into the cross that I made. And when Jesus stumbled in front of me, I saw him carrying the cross with my initials. It was my cross." And the whole point of the story is that boy is us. It's my cross. It's not somebody else's cross. That's what David is saying. That's how personal this psalm is. David says, he restores my soul. I am lost without my shepherd. He came and put me on his shoulders and carried me back to where I need to go. Why? Because I could not do it on my own. That's how powerfully personal this psalm is. David said, lies down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. But he says he doesn't just bring me back. It doesn't stop there. He says, what else does the Lord do for me? He says, the Lord leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Because of who he is. He doesn't just lead me. He doesn't just bring me back and put me on the ground and put me on my own after he saved me. He guides me. He's walked that path already. He's already shown me how to walk that path. And he takes me and he guides me. He leads me on that path of righteousness. Jesus doesn't send me off on my own, David says. He restores my soul and he says, David, follow me. That's what God is saying. Follow me. David says, I understand. My God, my shepherd, isn't just telling me. He has shown me where it is that I'm supposed to go. Is it any wonder that David would say, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall have no want. There is nothing missing. He provides for me every single thing that I need in this life. And so David says, that's who my shepherd is. That's just the first half of that psalm. But don't you just love how personal David is? When he talks about what the shepherd means to us, and it may be possible that you're sitting here tonight and your soul's never been restored. You've wandered away from God. He's never put you on his shoulders and carried you back, but that's what he wants to do. Jesus died on your cross and my cross. And that's what he wants. For us to come back. He wants to pick us up and carry us back and lead us in a life of righteousness. Maybe you have. Maybe you've done that. And yet when you break open the Psalms, you realize, wow, sometimes my relationship is just not as strong as what David seems to describe. Sometimes it seems to be waning a little bit. Maybe you need to talk to your shepherd. Let him carry you again. Let him guide you again. Maybe you need help getting back to God's flock. If there's some way we could help you with that, we would love to be able to do that. He indeed is the great shepherd who, when Jesus describes that himself in John chapter 10, he tells us that he is the shepherd that guides us. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2 as we close. 1 Peter chapter 2. Talking about Jesus in verse 22. And in verse 21, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who when he was reviled did not revile in return, when he suffered he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed, for you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. Amen. He says, that's what he did for us. How could we not want to do everything we possibly could for him. If we can help you respond tonight, let us know while we stand and while we sing.
When we walk with the Lord,